What are the elements of the good doctor-patient relationship? Why do they sometimes go sour? Is the compliant patient a good patient? What can be done about the obnoxious patient? Or the over-dependent patient who wants advice about everything? These are problems that arise every day in the general practice of medicine, and many general practitioners do not realize the extent to which they are using psychotherapeutic skills in maintaining good doctor-patient relationships and in dealing with the emotional problems of such patients. No one has recognized this more clearly than leaders of the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association. Under their sponsorship, postgraduate courses in which the general practitioner can increase his psychotherapeutic skills have become available, often with the support of the National Institute of Mental Health. As a part of its contribution to this effort, Roche Laboratories is presenting this series of records in which leading American psychiatrists will act as psychiatric consultants in discussing problems seen by the general practitioner. The first two of these records will deal with problems in the doctor-patient relationship. Others will be concerned with the recognition and treatment of anxiety, depression, and psychosomatic disorders. Here to discuss problems that may arise in doctor-patient relationships are Dr. Daniel Blaine, President of the American Psychiatric Association, former Commissioner of Mental Hygiene in California, and now Chairman and Dean of Psychiatry of the Institute of the Pennsylvania Hospital, one of the nation's oldest psychiatric hospitals. Dr. Dana L. Farnsworth, Director of the University Health Services, and Henry K. Oliver, Professor of Hygiene at Harvard University, and Chairman of the Program Committee of the American Medical Association, Congress on Community Mental Health Services and Resources. Dr. Howard P. Rome, President-elect of the American Psychiatric Association, Chief of Psychiatry at the Mayo Clinic, and Chairman of that department in the Mayo Foundation Graduate School of the University of Minnesota. Asking this panel of psychiatric experts questions concerning doctor-patient relations is Dr. Carol L. Witten, a leading general practitioner of Louisville, Kentucky, Speaker of the Congress of Delegates of the American Academy of General Practice, and instructor in medicine at the University of Louisville School of Medicine. The first voice you hear will be that of Dr. Witten.
What do you feel needs to be established in the initial office visit and maintained between the doctor and the patient? Dr. Farnsworth?
The most important thing, it seems to me, is to develop in the mind of the patient the fact that the physician is willing to listen and is trying to understand. It should be one at which the patient has a chance to say what is on his mind, what he is worried about in all its complexities, without having to be put into the straitjacket of a formal medical history.
Dr. Rome?
The informality that Dr. Farnsworth recommends, I feel, is most important. And I think the most important thing to be done to maintain this informality is to elaborate on the meaning of the chief complaint. We're taught that one starts in with the chief complaint. The vagaries and the subtle meanings and the overtones of the chief complaint can only be elaborated upon by giving the opportunity to the patient to give a history. Most of the time we take histories, and the very violence implied in the business of taking history destroys the thing that most often the patient is most anxious to give us if we just sit still long enough to listen to him.
Now, do you feel, Dr. Blaine, that there is some hostility in the initial visit that must be overcome between the physician and the patient?
That idea hits me rather as an error. I think that there's probably anxiety. If the anxiety is related to hostility of a general nature, there may be some there. But in general, my experience is that patients come with some feeling of confidence that the doctor can do something for them. Now, if there's something wrong and you don't come with such an idea, then the image of the doctor has obviously been distorted somewhere, or they've had bad experiences before.
Dr. Farnsworth?
Quite often, a feeling of hostility really masks a feeling of anxiety. And if the doctor who encounters a hostile patient can bear in mind that that is really a troubled patient, and that hostility is one of the methods by which he is holding himself together, then he doesn't have to return the same feeling in kind. I believe it was Eric Hoffer who said, rudeness is a weak man's imitation of strength. And so the doctor must take that as part of the problem, just as he takes an objective view toward a secretion, which isn't socially acceptable, but which has to be examined in order to get at the real trouble that is bothering the patient.
Isn't there always a danger of development of an overdependence of the patient upon the doctor? Dr. Blaine?
Yes, I think that's a danger. Some people are dependent individuals. Some of them have never grown up to accept responsibility very much, and they intend to try to get someone to allow them to depend on them. There are others who protect themselves from such a dependence, which they perhaps are really unconsciously afraid of, by being obviously brusque and hostile and daring you to do something that they don't like, and so on. I think that these are sort of signals that the doctor, if he becomes an intuitive individual, he begins to appreciate these signals.
I wonder if you aren't using the term dependence with the meaning of overdependence. I am dependent upon my personal physician and on my dentist and on the policeman and on the grocery store operator. We are all dependent on one another. So what we're talking about is a kind of pathological dependence, a dependence that gets in the way of a good relationship, and which really should be a matter of discussion between the doctor and the patient. He can teach him quite often how to manage without having to call him at 3 a.m. I believe a patient will appreciate being treated as an adult in this fashion rather than as somewhat less responsible than ourselves.
Well, Dr. Farnsworth, we would recognize, however, that some patients do become overly dependent. They develop this so-called transference phenomenon, and then perhaps on the doctor's part, some counter-transference. Would you agree to this?
Well, I believe that most of the experiences that a physician and his patient have can be expressed in English. A part of the difficulty that psychiatrists have in expressing themselves with their colleagues outside the field of psychiatry is in using words like transference and countertransference, the id and the ego and the superego and the ego idea. Well, this is very confusing. This is one of the methods by which patients with pseudo-knowledge about themselves pick up these terms, use them glibly, have no idea what they mean, and so tend to impede communication rather than aid it. I would suggest that instead of thinking in terms of transference and countertransference, that we think in terms of how does the patient react to me? Has he over-idealized my role? And in turn, I might think, have I become unduly irritated at his dependence on me?
Dr. Rome, What should a physician do with a patient who comes every week, we'll say, and wears the doctor out with the same old story about the same symptoms, the same complaints?
If the doctor feels that he's worn out with the same old patient with the same old complaints, I should think the best way to handle it is for the doctor to refer the patient to someone else. For it seems to me that the kinds of remedies that are indicated at this juncture in order to be able to have the physician adapt a more accepting attitude toward the patient are of such an order of magnitude that there is no simple, easy solution to the problem other than referral at this time.
I'd like to say this, however. I think it's very important how that's done. I think that the doctor, in saying, listen, here's some things that have been bothering you a long time, and you keep telling me how they occur, and I need some help perhaps, and I think you need some help from somebody else who might be able to give you certain slants on this that I don't have, but you can always come back to me. I think that it's very important even though he may regard the patient as a nuisance, nevertheless, he owes it to that patient to transfer him in such a way that he doesn't damage him even further.
Thank you, Dr. Blaine. Well, let's carry this a little bit further and state that, unfortunately, in this small community in which this occurs, there is no specialist present. There's not even another general practitioner. How, then, can the doctor take care of this problem?
Oh, I think the doctor has many, many resources beyond those of colleagues in his own professional discipline. There are religious advisors, there are friends, there are family lawyers, there are other kinds of persons who can, in this particular instance, act in the role of some sympathetic, understanding listener. It's this that the patient is looking for, and it seems to me that it's this that each physician has as resources in his community, even though he may be a solitary, solo practitioner in that community.
I think some of my experiences when I used to practice medicine up in Maine in the late 1930s, I remember one patient said, "I haven't had a deep breath in 30 years, doctor." Another one kept coming day after day, it seemed to me. It probably was week after week with the same old symptoms. I had to make myself my own patient, in a sense, to understand the nature of the life these people lived. Seeing the doctor was a social event. It was my job then to try to teach them something about the nature of their feelings as to why these were so important to them. And the result was that these people developed a great sense of loyalty to me, and I felt very friendly to them. But had I shown irritation, I would have lost them and would not have been able to help them.
I'd like to ask you only one question. You stated when you used to practice medicine. You're still a physician. Don't you practice medicine today?
That was a very significant slip that I made. What I really meant to say was when I was doing general practice myself, and this is the error that psychiatrists fall in over and over again, in spite of their preaching to all their colleagues that they're really physicians, they don't always believe it fully themselves.
Welcome to the group.